ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमः
भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam 1:17:24. Yeah. Tapashocham daya satyam. Tapashocham daya satyam. Iti pada krite kritahoa. Adharmam kshaistrayo bhavnaan. Adharmam kshaistrayo bhavnaan. Shmaya sangha madhaistava. Tapashocham daya satyam. Iti padah kate kritoha. Adharmam kshaistrayo bhagnaha. Smaya sangha madhaistava. Tapaha. Austerity. Sounds like Australia. Shocham, cleanliness. Daya, mercy. Satyam, truthfulness. So here's the four principles of religion: tapa, socham, daya, and satyam. Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Iti, thus. Padaha, legs, krite, in the age of satya, kritaha, established, adharma, irreligiosity, that's interesting, angshayahi, by the parts, Trayoho. Three combined. Bhagnaha. Broken. Shmaya. Pride. Sangha. Too much association with women. And I found it interesting because this says Sangha, the Prabhupada specifically translates as too much Sangha with women. Madai, intoxication. Tava, pure. Okay. Tapashocham daya satyam iti pada krite kritaha. Adharmam kshaish trayo bhagnaha smaya sangha madais tava. Even if you don't understand what it means, it sounds nice, right? Just to hear it. Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified, of course, as the Nigama Kalpa Karora Galitam Palam, the ripened fruit of all the Vedic literatures. So even great modern scholars say that there's no equal. It's like, again, it's like the moon compared to the stars. We're talking about the beauty of the poetry, the depth of the philosophy, and the sophistication of the grammar. There's nothing like Srimad Bhagavatam. So, translation. Now again, this is Maharaj Pariksit talking to Dharma in the form of a bull. And this whole first canto we're explaining is like a preface. It tells us why the Bhagavatam is being written. What's the purpose for writing it? What are the qualifications of the principal speaker? What qualifications are there for the principal listener? Under what circumstances is it being written? So this is all in a preface. This first canto does it very well. So we've seen who Maharaj Pariksit is, seen who Sukadeva Goswami is, and now this is the specific circumstances, right, of their meeting. that the general circumstances are that Kali Yuga is coming and Krishna has gone. Krishna Swadhamma Upagate. Okay, so we need an incarnation to protect us, and that incarnation will be, and the father will be Maharaj Pariksit. Prabhupada says this, and the mother will be father will be Sukadeva Goswami, and the mother will be Maharaj Pariksit. Okay. Specifically, Maharaj Pariksit is being unfairly cursed. This is kind of like a symptom of Kali Yuga. Unfairly cursed. And then what else? And he's going to not take any reaction, I don't think. Yeah, okay. So then he gets the chance to meet Sukadeva Goswami under these circumstances. So this chapter 17 is also especially nice because it's has so many things about practical dharma in the Kali Yuga. It's describing all the symptoms of Kali Yuga, the Brahmins become contaminated, the principles of religion become annihilated, all these things like that. And of course, in ISKCON, we have to fight with these same things. We have to contend with these same things. And it also shows that Kali Yuga is the age of compromise. Compromise. You can't have pure, Kritya Yuga, Satya Yuga Dharma in the age of Kali. So you make so many adjustments, and that creates a circumstance where we can engage in Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord. And that will make everything pure, like that, and so on. It's a very, very practical chapter, very useful. To meditate on the lotus feet of Krishna means to recite the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam again and again, like that. Even the gopis, when they start to think about Krishna, they start with his lotus feet, okay? And they go up. The higher your building is, the better the foundation, right? So if you want to go all the way to Krishna's smiling face, you have to know these first cantos very well. How many chapters, where everything is. Wonderful for preaching. Okay, so now, Dharma has said, well, I can't really blame anybody. This guy was beating on me and, destroyed three of my legs. I can't blame him because ultimately everything is being controlled by Krishna. So ultimately, whatever is happening to me is Krishna's desire. So why should I blame him? So we discussed that particular point. Yeah. And now he goes on talking about the different ages and the different situations and how these really horrible things can be happening. We shouldn't expect anything else. It's called Kali Yuga. In the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by four principles: austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs, are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. Okay, please repeat. In the age of Satya.
In the age of Satya.
Truthfulness.
Your
four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion. In the form of pride,
lust for women,
and intoxication. Okay, purport. The
deluding
energy or material nature can act upon the living beings proportionately in terms of the living beings falling prey to the deluding attraction of Maya. Okay. Moths are captivated by the glaring brightness of light, and thus they become prey to the fire. Similarly, the deluding energy is always captivating the conditioned souls to become prey to the fire of delusion. And the Vedic scriptures warn the conditioned souls not to become prey to delusion, but to get rid of it. Yeah. The Vedas warn us to go not to the darkness of ignorance, but to the progressive path of life. Tamasi Mam Jyotirgam. Thomas Imam, Jyotir of God. Yeah. Not to go to darkness, but to go to the path of light. The Lord Himself also warns that the deluding power of the external energy is too powerful to overcome. The one who completely surrenders unto the Lord can easily do so. What's the verse? Daivihi esha dunamayi mamamaya nirattaya mameva niye prapajante maya meva tarantite. Okay, take the time to look up the verses, chant them, and that way you'll be reviewing Bhagavad Gita, you know, the same way Prabhupada uses it. Okay, you finish your bhakti shastra, but then all the time you're doing bhakti by bhava, you know, when you're going through the books, look up the verses Prabhupada quotes, you know, look at the purports, and then you'll have an automatic study guide, you know, for improving your Bhagavad Gita knowledge. When people ask this question, okay, Prabhupada quotes a verse from the Bhagavad Gita in the purport. How many verses from Bhagavad Gita do you have to know so you have like a 70% chance of knowing that verse? A little complicated there, you see what I mean? Prabhupada's going to quote a verse. Now, how many verses do you have to know? Maybe 20, 30, 50. So, okay, if I know this many verses, I'll have a 70% chance of knowing all the verses Prabhupada cites. How many verses do you think Prabhupada cites from Bhagavad Gita? About 70% of the time. 200, 300? No, people estimate maybe about 50. There are 50 verses that are real principle like that and so on. So you don't have to learn everything. You know, our acharyas and our acharya Prabhupada are giving us, you know, our literatures in a very specific, practical fashion for the modern age like that. Okay. It's very difficult to overcome Krishna's energy, but if we surrender to Krishna, we can do it. But to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is also not very easy. Such a sense surrender is possible by persons of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. These four principles of advanced civilization were remarkable features in the age of Satya. In that age, every human being was practically a qualified brahmana of the highest order. And in the social orders of life, they were all paramahamsas, or the topmost in the renounced order. Sounds like Adam and Eve, right? The Garden of Eden. By cultural standing, the human beings were not at all subjected to the deluding energy. Such strong men of character were competent enough to get away from the clutches of Maya. But gradually, as the basic principle of Brahminical culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, maybe four times Prabhupada mentioned, became curtailed by proportionate development of pride, attachment for women, and intoxication. The path of salvation, or the path of transcendental bliss, okay, retreated far, far away from human society. With the progression of the age of Kali, people are becoming very proud and attached to women and intoxication. By the influence of this age of Kali, even a pauper is proud of his penny. There's a new phrase for you in your dictionary. The big words that Prabhupada uses. Even a pauper is proud of his penny. The women are always dressed in an overly attractive fashion to victimize the minds of men. And the man is addicted to drinking wine, smoking, drinking tea, and chewing tobacco, etc. All these habits, or so-called advancement of civilization, are the root causes of all irreligiosities, and therefore it is not possible to check corruption, bribery, and nepotism. What is nepotism? Just see. If you actually have a dictionary with you when reading Prabhupada's books, you'll develop a very nice vocabulary. Nepotism is putting people who are your, you know, biological relatives into positions, not because they're qualified, but because it's my cousin, like that. You know. Okay? Does it go on like that? Yeah. Okay. Man cannot check all these evils simply by statutory acts and police vigilance, but he can cure the disease of the mind by the proper medicine, namely, advocating the principles of Brahminical culture, or the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and... Okay, I think five times. Modern civilization and economic development are creating a new situation of poverty and scarcity with the result of blackmailing the consumer commodities, right? That means if you want to get the things you need, you have to, like, you know, cooperate with us, you have to work like an ass, you have to kill yourself just for food and things like that. So it appears in the past this wasn't going on, you know? But because modern civilization and economic development, modern economic development, this is strange because it says economic development is creating a situation of poverty. Sounds strange, right? But that's the way it works. You know? Yeah. And the more we develop a particular system of industrialization and capitalization, then the more common people are actually suffering. You know, I haven't got many studies on this. Like, it's like 70% of the wealth in America is owned by 15% of the population. Right? 70% of the wealth is owned by 15% of the population. Other 80% only has 30%. And scarcity was the result of blackmailing the consumer commodities. If the leaders and the rich men of society spend 50% of their accumulated wealth mercifully for the misled mass of people and educate them in God consciousness, the knowledge of Bhagavatam, okay, certainly the age of Kali will be defeated in its attempts to entrap the conditioned souls. So very nice formula. And Prabhupada doesn't say 50% of your income, he says 50% of your accumulated wealth, like that. When I was working in San Francisco, actually I joined the temple, and to get a job in San Francisco, I was working for a bank, and I was a reconciler. And all the banks that didn't have their own MasterCard system, they would send all their information to us, you know, to process their MasterCard things. And at that time, everybody was using these paper things where you slide the thing, the paper thing comes off. So the bank would send us like a list. Okay, here's 7,254 transactions for a total of $147,213.14. Okay, and here's all the cards. They've gone through our card reader. Okay, now what they sent us didn't match up with what the card reader said. So we reconcilers had to sit there and figure out what the difference was. Why was there a difference like that? Yeah. I got what I had here. Verse 3. Bhagavatam. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So creating a situation of economic poverty. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So then why while I was working there, you're paying me so much as, you know, as basically a Shudra laborer. And I calculated, you know, to live, I didn't want to live where I was living. It wasn't a pleasant place to live. I would have lived probably in the country or something, you know. And so that took away, but maybe half the salary was just to live where I didn't want to live. You know? Then I had to wear clothes I didn't want to wear. And then the job was so hellish that when I came home, I had to do something like, you know, drink root beer or eat ice cream or something, you know, some kind of, you know, acceptable Hare Krishna intoxication. One guy told me, David Presta, he was a health inspector for the county. He said, Hanuman Swami, if you can control three things, you can control America. Beer, marijuana, and videos. Like that. Yeah. Everybody comes home, they have some light intoxication, beer or marijuana. They buy a pizza, have their friends over, watch a new, you know, senseless video, have a little sex at night every now and again, and go back to work. And that's the way America goes on for the most part. I don't know about Australia, mate, but yeah. A little light intoxication, forget everything, my problems, and then, you know, go on like that. And you retire at 65 and die at 72. Like that. So their pension, they haven't got to pay your pension very long. Yeah. And the whole time, again, you know, my final calculation was that actually out of the money I was making, only about 10 or 15% was under my control. Everything else was really just money I had to use to get to, you know, to make the money. You know, I was basically a slave, you know, so on. So then, okay, you're supposed to give 50% of your wealth, your income, to the temple, but you can't do it. No. So Prabhupada says here, 50% of your accumulated wealth. Okay. So if I'm accumulating, you know, 12%, I can give a 6% donation to the temple, which I was doing like that. And also, it doesn't mean to the temple. You can also support publication of books or other literature like that. But that's the idea. We should use whatever accumulated wealth we have to to promote, you know, the study of Bhagavatam, dramas, literature, so many things like that, and especially for common people. And that way we'll defeat the age of Kali. Okay? Yeah. And, but don't worry, he'll fight back. Yeah. You must always remember that false pride, or too high an estimation of one's own values of life, yeah? Undue attachment to women or association with them, and intoxication will divert human civilization from the path of peace. However much the people clamor for peace in the world. Yeah. What's the first one here? We must always remember that false pride, or too high an estimation of one's own values of life. Yeah. So Prabhupada says that one should not become too proud of his own opinion. So especially working in the academic area, that's what people are really proud of, is their ideas, their intelligence. My brains are bigger than your brains, like that. You know? But if you're into bodybuilding, then you're popular with muscles. And if you're a lady, maybe be proud of your sons, your children. My son is better than your son. You know? Or my, whatever it is, everybody is proud of something. You know? But too high an estimation of one's own values of life also. Prabhupada says that one should not be too concerned about other people's religious principles. I was becoming irritated because one of my authorities, Niskan, wasn't getting up from Mangalartik regularly and chanting his rounds regularly, and I was becoming more and more irritated. So at one point I opened one of Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada said, one should not be too concerned about other people's religious principles. You should, this will simply agitate the mind. You should focus more on your own principles. Doesn't mean we don't think about them, but, you know, we're concerned about getting our principles together and being a good example and things like that and so on. Yeah. Okay. But on the other hand, it says, important point, we must always remember that too high an estimation. So it doesn't mean we're actually trying to be, Prabhu, I'm lower than the worm in the stool, Prabhu, this and that. No. We have a certain ability. We have certain things. Jayananda Das, Prabhupada's great devotee, he was like humility personified. So they asked me what humility meant, and he said, basically it means understanding who you are. You know, not overestimating and not underestimating, but actually understanding what is my ability, what can I do like that? You know, how much sense control do I have? You know, what value do my ideas have? What abilities do I have? You know, that's humility. It's figuring out who you are, and then act according to that. Okay, so not too high, not too low. The preaching of the Bhagavatam principles will automatically render all men austere, clean, both inside and outside, merciful to the suffering, and truthful in daily behavior. That is the way of correcting the flaws of human society, which is very prominently exhibited at the present moment. So most newspapers have like a column where they have a section where people can submit their opinions about things like that. And also, especially on certain current topics, or some big topic, they're very happy to have an expert opinion. You know, someone writing, some priest writing, or somebody, and they'll even pay you for this, actually, you know, so on. So you just take these purports, adjust them a little bit, and then submit it with your name. No problem. And give 60% for the temple. And this is such great opportunities for preaching. Everywhere there's opportunities to teach people the principles of the Bhagavatam, like that. So everybody has to find out what is their nature, and don't be lazy. Get out there, do something, right? And we'll see very quickly, you know, things change. They're already changing a lot. You know, from my observation, traveling, and everything else, a lot of things have changed. You know? And so, in some ways, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, before he left his body, somebody asked him about, where is ISKCON? What do you think about it, honestly? And he said it was like a lady 7 months pregnant, you know, still some pains, you know, obviously. But just hang in there like we've been doing just 2 more months or how many more years, and then we're going to see something really, you know, great manifest. For example, the first country to elect a Krishna conscious president, right? Doesn't have to be a big country, Poland. Many countries with the Krishna Fest or programs like that. There are many countries that are becoming conscious. Actually, some time ago, They were interviewing somebody in some Middle Eastern, Eastern European country, and they'd had this problem, that problem, genocide, everything else, and struggling like this and that. And they asked him, like, well, what do you think is the solution for your country? And he said, you know, we've tried monarchy, we've tried fascism, you know, we've tried capitalism. Why not Hare Krishna? Okay. He was joking, but that's kind of what it's coming down to. Because, you know, these guys have been around for a long time. They haven't done anything weird. And my cousin took me to one of their restaurants, and the food was pretty good. And the people were, you know, it's just like, that's gone out to that level. The people have contact with ISKCON, other groups like that, you know. And so they're beginning to think that, well, maybe there's something here like that. And when the conscious intention turns, then you can start talking to them, you know. Before, it's just they have to just experience it as part of the environment, you know. But when you start to actually look, and you can start communicating, it's a whole different thing. Basically, it's going by going from Advaita Acharya to Nityananda, from the Paramatma to Guru at that point. You know? Pap Padarshika Guru. Pap, what does Pap Padarshika Guru mean? Vartmana Padarshika Guru.
Who shows the path?
Yeah, who shows the path, like that. So all of us can do that. We can show people the path to the temple. Walk down the street, turn right, go inside. The path, you know, to the information, the Prabhupada's books. You know. And, you know, you don't have to be so highly qualified yourself. You can, you know, use enough to get them on the right path. Shiksha Guru. And then when they're fixed properly, the Diksha Guru matriculates them into the process formally. Now you're formally connected. You know, we make our promises, Krishna makes his promises. It's like formally enrolling in the school. And then after that, then there's so much Shiksha Guru. Papadarshika is also Shiksha Guru, but after, you know, the instruction is, okay, now you're here properly, okay, now we're going to instruct you how to come to perfection, like that. Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath, Sambandha, Abhideya, Ayojana. It's a science, like that. One time a devotee, we were in the Philippines, and Prabhupada said the Philippines are the land of the ghosts, okay? So our temple there was a big house, you know, and it was kind of raised up, about a half story raised up, because there's floods there, okay? And so some devotees were living underneath like that, you know, wasn't the flood season. So I was walking with him. Actually, I'll tell the story a little bit more. Because I have a background in psychology, so I've done hypnosis, everything like that, you know. I've cured diseases, you know. So anyway, he wanted me, he's a brahmacharya, he wanted me to try and do something with his wife because she was having some problems, this and that. So we started doing this whole thing. And all these little white flies started coming like that. Just wow. So we actually had to finally come out of the section under the house where he was, a nice place. And that right away, that, you know, the land of the ghosts, that's right away, that's kind of like, you know, you're messing around with a subtle area, and these influences are indicate like, you know, some kind of subtle agitation. So we came out and walked around the back of the building, and then we looked under, and there was kind of a light shining under there in this darkness area that we're, you know. So he walked under to get it and came back out, and there was blood coming down his face like this, you know, so on. Wow. As it turned out, somebody had cut off a pipe, and then it was a sharp edge, and he hit himself and cut it like that. It was a small cut, about this bit. But it wouldn't stop bleeding. And all this just indicates, you know, hey, you're messing around in this subtle area with hypnosis, and, you know, get out of our area. You know, all these calamities, bad events, experiences. There is a subtle world. So then, they're putting pressure on it, it wouldn't stop, pressure on it, it wouldn't stop. Little cut, you know. So finally, we took him to the local clinic. It was an outdoor clinic, you know, with grass walls and everything else, and maybe two doctors working, people there. So finally, we got him. And the doctor was a young Filipino guy. He said, where are you from? What are you doing? Why are you dressed this way? And he was more interested in us than he was, you know, the devotees than he was in, like, the medical problem. And he said, yeah, there's a vein there. You know, you just cut a vein. You'll never stop it just by pressure. You've got to, like, tie it off, you know. So Chakravarti was lying there. And the guy's talking to us while he's working on it. It was just like a machine. The guy's talking, you know. So he pulled the vein out and just kind of tied it off, you know. And he knew which direction was the hot direction, right? He knew which direction the blood was coming from. Because one side, you know, you don't tie it off, it's the use. The other side, the blood's coming from. So I was seeing the guy, he was, you know, he just, like a machine, you know. So he pulled it out and he stuck it back in. He put the two stitches while he's talking to us. And Chakravarti's going, like that. And he was like, no. And they said, yeah, we're outside, a lot of bacteria and stuff, a little antibiotic, like that. But he wasn't even conscious of what he was doing. He was just like halfway there because it was just like a simple, mechanical thing for him, like that. So this is, devotional service is the same way. Prabhupada's talking to somebody who has a big problem. He's somebody else comes in, it's more interesting. He's talking to them. He says like this and that. Solves their whole 20-year problem with half an interest like that. So, well, thank you, Swamiji. So we can learn this. We can learn theology. This is theology. Okay. We can learn this Bhagavad Dharma. To the level of first aid. Right. First aid. What's the first principle of first aid? Something happens. You've got to intervene with your first aid knowledge. What's the first principle? Boy, you better learn something like that. It's good. Every devotee should know this. I mean, I've seen devotees save people's lives because they know that. You should have some courses here. The first principle is evaluate the situation and don't get yourself in the same problem that the other person's in like that. If he's grabbed hold of some electrical wire and he's being electrocuted, don't get electrocuted. Or if he's drowning, don't get yourself drowning. Okay. First principle is the caregiver should make sure he's not going to get, and either the preacher should make sure the people that he's preaching to are not going to drag him into mire. Okay? Yeah, very important. When you're preaching, be careful you're not getting beyond your limits of what's going on, or you're going to be able to drag him. Okay, then next, what do you check for next?
Airways.
Huh?
Airways.
ABC. Actually, no. You can bleed to death faster than you can suffocate. Yeah. You got an arm cut off, you can bleed to death while you're so on. So check for heavy bleeding. Okay. There's a science like that. Okay, the person's got heavy bleeding, a tourniquet, they're not breathing. Okay, heart. Okay. And then, okay, you're going. Someone's called the ambulance. Now we got somebody with more knowledge, So first aid, you can keep somebody alive for 20 minutes, The ambulance, you can keep them alive long enough to get to a resident doctor who doesn't know how to do surgery or anything else, but you can get the guy stable until the next morning. Real doctor comes in and says, okay, I'll do a little surgery right now, but this is really smashed. You're going to need a real, orthopedic surgery over a couple months to correct this, but I'll fix it. So there's see different levels, right? We tell people, you're not the body. And then Prabhupada says, you're not the body. Like that, So as much as we learn this, then we can actually use it, right? We can actually apply it to people. We can just look at people, And you see Prabhupada, when he's talking to people, he's like a doctor taking his symptoms. He's poking them, see how they react. He's looking at them, stick out your tongue. Where are you from? What do you do? Yeah. And after a few minutes, he's got them, figured out what this guy needs. One person came in, the devotees brought this guy in England to see Prabhupada. And when he came in, he was very erect, upright, and had a suit on. And, within just a couple of minutes, but less than that, maybe even within 1 minute or 90 seconds, Prabhupada figured out the guy was a well-dressed fool. he worked in the government, he was very, very proud of this and that, and Swabaji, this and that, So in a couple of seconds, Prabhupada, and after that, Prabhupada started like chastising him, probably exactly the same way his superiors dealt with him at work, like that. And he became humble and like most of them were asking questions. And then Prabhupada was very, nice with him, but like now he was acting properly. So preaching is a whole science, how to apply it to everything else like that. And this purport, of course, is fantastic, for preaching, for certain circumstances, everything else like that. What are the four principles of religion? Austerity.
Mercy.
In Sanskrit? Socham. Daya. Satya. Kapha. Yeah, and Prabhupada quotes it four times in the purport here. It's almost like Prabhupada's like trying to teach us this. Yeah. So any comments or questions? Oh. Complaints? So actually what we've been doing is we've been having a seminar on Light of the Bhagavan the last few days. And we've been developing this as our humble attempt as a tool for preaching. Prabhupada was invited in 1961 to go to a congress in Japan on
Cultivation
of the Human Spirit. So you can advertise this, third annual symposium on cultivation of the human spirit, like that, sponsored by, so and so. And then you invite different people, who are interested in cultivating the human spirit, ecologists, Jewish people, whatever, the government, so many people. It's such a nice title, nice theme like that. And then we especially contribute Light of the Bhagavat, right? Because there's so many different people can contribute in different ways. So Prabhupada actually took one chapter from the 10th canto, Description of Autumn, and it has beautiful lessons from nature, like that. And then, after he left his body, because Prabhupada couldn't go to the Congress, Tamal Krishna Maharaj generated the whole thing as a book, which actually was twice the size originally. And it has this beautiful art, which was done, by a very qualified Chinese lady. And so it's a wonderful tool for preaching. And it's designed for a certain class of people. Prabhupada has in his mind very clearly who he's talking to. Intelligent people, intellectual people, artistic people, oriental people, like that. People appreciate nature, pantheism. So there's so many kinds of audiences we're trying to reach. The Bhaktivedanta Institute is designed for preaching to scientists. And scientists don't like this so much. They don't hate it, but it's just not their way of thinking about things. Scientific mentality means very linear. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like this. And this kind of hops around. A little this, a little that. More tasteful. Yeah. So everybody has a particular nature, the way of doing things. I know some of my godbrothers are fantastic book distributors on the street. But psychologists who in the temple classified them as practically almost clinically absorbed, which means they need medical help because they can absorb them whatever they think about. They look at one person, forget everything else. Something else comes up like that. They have this nature, absorptive nature. This guy was almost to the point of being needing medical intervention. But he was a great Sankirtan devotee on the street. Because you start talking to somebody, hey, check it out, where are you from, this and that, everything else, and the guy, spits on you, kicks you in the face, insults your logic, you turn to the next guy, completely forgotten. Or this guy gives you $1 million, So that was his environment, was just going from person to person, short contact, intense contact, One time he went to a lecture at Stanford, big university, and he was going to give the lecture because he's a big, great preacher, And so it was maybe about 400 students, professors, very intelligent people, everything else. So he's supposed to give the lecture. He just froze. I was kind of sitting next to him, other people sitting, and he wasn't saying anything. And after a couple of seconds, he was actually standing up. So I kind of stood up and pushed him down like that. And after about 4 or 5 minutes, 5 minutes, he began to breathe again and so on. Like I said, I'll never do that ever again. Because he had to be able to, make a presentation over half an hour and stick with the people and everything else like that. So everybody's got their particular nature, the kind of association they feel natural with, everything else. I've seen 7-year-old kids, devotees, preaching to 7-year-old kids like that. It's amazing how they've got the philosophy like that. So intense, So find your particular preaching tools, your way. This is what self-realization means, right? Become self-realized, build your character, and preach. Okay? And you'll live in Vaikuntha. You won't live in the material world. Okay? So this is a good tool. We have a movie. Our idea is, Tamal Krishna Maharaj had the same idea. It was amazing. Said, have an art exhibition. Show all the art, some of the art, someplace. Give guided tours. Have a couple of workshops on some of the themes in here. There's many very, very good themes. Ecology, cow protection, the ultimate nature of the soul, and what is it hankering after in its most intense moments. Varnashram, divorce, student life, economic relations between the Shudras and the capitalists, the capitalists and the communists. Fantastic themes to attract people and have different workshops, a couple of these. You can use the art for posters. You can use the purports for stimulating dialogue. And we're not so much concerned about coming to a conclusion. We're more concerned about getting people focused on things properly and opening up the dialogue like that. And then after that, you know, we have Prabhupada's biography, you know, to get the person Bhagavatam, like that, very attractive. We have a movie for that. Then after that, Upadeshamrita, summary of everything. In text 22, Prabhupada says, if you want to know more about this in Lord Chaitanya and Vrindavan, then you should read the valuable works left by the Goswamis. So what do we have from Rupa Goswami that Prabhupada gave us? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and? Upadeshamrita, yeah, like that. Upadeshamrita is a summary of everything. Everything there, from the most simple to the most advanced in 11 verses. And then Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, is a complete explanation. 1,700 verses. And Dhanadhara Maharaj has given very good commentary to explain many things, because Prabhupada had to do it very quickly. And these are very difficult words to translate. And also it's a very analytical book. So you need like graphics to understand how the concepts are related. Prabhupada just says it, but in your mind, you know, maybe in your somebody your Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you don't need to have it drawn out for you. But we do. So devotees are taking Prabhupada's books, you're taking these things, right? That's our job. And then, summary, complete science, and Prabhupada mentions it many times, Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava. And these are two dramas, yeah, about Krishna in Vrindavan and Krishna in Dwarka. Like that. And there he demonstrates everything he's talking about, you know, the different mellows and feelings and sentiments of what is pure love of God. So very nice. You know, summary, complete science, and demonstration. Rupa Goswami, keep. So, but this we're using as a beginning, in a way to meet people. And so we've been having a seminar the last few days here. If anybody's interested, hopefully we'll be able to help you, you know, to get this going here, because it's a great way for preaching. Last night we showed our movie, which is from Peru, which is a beautiful extract of the whole thing like that. So then this purport is interesting. Can we go to the light of the Bhagavat? And okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'm looking for one purport, which I know is in the first part of the book. I think I've already passed it here. Huh. Okay. This is a disaster. I can't find my purport. Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was number 3. Prabhupada talks about exactly the same points like that. Okay. Rich people. Okay, I did up a table of contacts, a table of contents and an index, because there's no index. So if I had it with me, I could find the purport. But I can't find it. But there's only 48 texts. Yes. Residence of the person's knowledge, yes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. A lot of these I know it, and it's not that Sanskrit word. Huh. That's strange. Okay, I guess Krishna doesn't want me to find it. Okay. Why not? Okay. So the purport says that there are big winds blowing the clouds, right? And Prabhupada says that the winds are the brahmanas, right? And the clouds are the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas. Right? And so the Brahmanas are supposed to inspire, right, the administrators and the economic class of people to organize these Sankirtan festivals, to preach the principles of the Bhagavatam, so common people can become enlightened and become purified and become happy. And it's so parallel. It's almost like identical things that Prabhupada is saying here like that. You know? And he goes on and says, that the brahmanas should not give up their jobs, even if things aren't going so well, and become kshatriyas and vaishyas, you know, in terms of administration and economic problems. They should go on with their preaching and activities and try and inspire these people like that. So it's a very interesting point. You know? And so as we as brahmanas here in the temple, in the beginning, the idea is this movement will attract first-class people and give them first-class habits. A first-class person is somebody who's honest, really, and honest with himself. And when he hears the truth, he says, yeah, I don't like it, but that's the truth. I've got to accept that. And then he can be trained in these principles, truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, like that. So in the beginning, we're, our movement is going to be more brahminical. You know? But later on, the idea is when we have brahmanas who can inspire people to organize things, give people the right perspective, you know, and then it becomes easy for people to make their money. They want to have a good government, like that. Chanika Pandit says, the citizens, the Shudras and the Vaishyas, they enrich the king. Yeah? And the king protects the citizens. But of these two, protection is more important than enrichment. Because without protection, you can't enjoy your wealth anyway. Right? And we see that. People are so frustrated about keeping their money and everything else. They go for fast food, fast marriage, everything else. There's no constancy. The government says, no, you can't do this in the business. You've got to make sure, for example, one business in the United States, they were doing very well, a software business, and then they had some hard problems. They had to start laying people off, you know, maybe like 5,000 employees, but they had to lay off maybe like 1,200 or something. And many of our Indian families were working there, and the husband and wife were both working. It wasn't that big of a city, you know. And so it got fired, and everybody noticed that in every family, very nice, in every family, either the husband or the wife had a job. Yeah. This is nepotism. They can't do that. They can't go through and look and see who the families are and stuff. But so, you know, nobody, it was obvious, but it was obvious that they'd done that. The company had gone through and looked at every family and made sure that somebody in that family had a job like that. So you can imagine how much loyalty is inspired in the people of that company like that. So, wow, they care about it. So on. So this is the government. And economic development, okay, so forth, so on. But the government says, no, this is economically more valuable. But forget it. You can't do this to people. You've got to watch out for these people. You know? In America, they were using sugar cane juice from the Philippines for soft drinks. They discovered they could use sugar beets, which they could grow in America, and make it cheaper. So this one year, they cut down all the growing, the harvesting, the manufacturing, the processing in the Philippines, and thousands of people were tossed out of work, and tens of thousands of people, the families didn't have any income. And, you know, people were pushed into poverty of the improper medication, improper so many things, and people died, really, you know, like that. You know? Well, so what? We have no responsibility. We paid them for, you know, for when they work for us. No, you've got to take care of people. That's where the Vaishya then has to have direction from the Kshatriya, who has more like things about human values, honor, these kind of things. Yeah. And they're all supposed to be guided by brahmanas. And that prophecy, that's the purpose we're trying to do now, is produce brahmanas. And how do you produce brahmanas? It's a science. Yeah, Prabhupada says, he asked that question. He says, Shunbatam Svakata Krishna Unya Shradhana Kirtanaha Pradiyantas Tauriya Bhadarani Vidunati Sukrishanam. It's the second chapter. By hearing and chanting, you become pious, punya. It's more than just knowing something, you become a good person. You become, what's the word, fortunate. Whenever you walk in the room, everybody thinks, oh, now things are going to go good. Like that. Yeah? Yeah. So hearing and chanting, even if you don't understand anything, you just come to this class and put your ears here like that. Even if you sleep during the class, but if you don't, it'll have a change. It'll have an effect like that. So regular classes, morning and evening, discussing these things, organizing discussion, and then for common people, puppet shows, right? Puppet shows are fantastic. Yeah? You see, so when we did like dramas and stuff in our temple in Berkeley. The Sunday feast attendance would go from like 300 to like 600. We had a drama going like that, and a good one like that. People would just tell each other. Then everybody would go out on Telegraph Avenue, which is the big campus place right near the temple, and in their costumes, passing out flyers, you know, So easy with them. But then what do you do with these people after they're coming and stuff? How do you get them engaged? You know, it's a whole science of how to preach and how to develop. And we're learning it. We've learned so much. So that's what we're trying to do, produce Brahminical culture, and from that inspire people to organize people properly, get them engaged, and then it's very easy to make your money then. When you've got good social relations, good political relations, you know each other, like that. And when the money's there, the economic situation, then so many people, most people, maybe, what is it, like, out of 1,000 people, you've heard that 900 will be Shudras. Okay, I'm 25% Shudras. No. Most people, when they come someplace, when they go to one of our communities, they're going to ask, where will my family stay, and what will I do? If you tell them your family's going to stay here, nice place, okay, this is what you're going to do. Finished. Satisfied. Then after that, what kind of cultural entertainment is there? What kind of education is for my kids? You know? But basically, most people are satisfied like that. You know? Then after that, you know, we stimulate them with, you know, good dramas, good theaters, good movie. Most people, not for reading books. Most people have to go see it through dramas, you know, well, puppet shows. And they remember the stories like that. Prabhupada says, Nanda Maharaj could not read or write the Vaishya. He would engage some educated fool to do it for him. Sound like software engineers? Yeah, that's the way it is. The Vaishyas are always, you know, okay. So even Nanda Maharaj could not read or write. Prabhupada says, what to speak of the Gauravs? What to speak of the Gauravs? You know? So I guess some of the gopis could read and write, because their names are Induleka. Okay. But most of them, they couldn't even read and write. You know? Prabhupada said they would know everything, because they would go to the lectures and the dramas put on by the brahmanas, and they knew everything about the universe and how things work like that. So common people, they need dramas, movies, you know, everything like that. And then they can understand, they'll act properly like that. So any final comments, questions? So Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki. Everybody wants to talk individually. We'll be here after the lecture for 7 minutes. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah.